Signs are like the Alpha and the Omega of God's unfolding revelation. We can see them from the very beginning, with the sign of a tree of life in a garden in Eden, to the very end, when the sign was offered as a vision of a city of God with a river running through it. Signs remind us that God has not abandoned us. God is dwelling with us.
That's the Reverend Dr. Becca Stevens, and today she brings you an inspiring message of faith and hope. I'm Peter Wallace. This is Day One.
Welcome to Day One, the weekly program that brings you outstanding preachers from America's mainline Protestant churches, sharing insight and inspiration from God's Word for your life. Now, here's our host, Peter Wallace, to introduce today's preacher.
Thanks, Sherry. We're delighted to welcome today the Reverend Dr. Becca Stevens, an Episcopal priest, entrepreneur, author, and social justice activist. Becca is founder and president of Thistle Farms, a community of women who have survived trafficking, prostitution, and addiction. She also serves as the Episcopal chaplain at St. Augustine's Chapel, which serves the Vanderbilt University campus in Nashville, Tennessee, where she lives with her husband, songwriter Marcus Humman, and their three sons. Becca is the author of Snake Oil, The Art of Healing and Truth-Telling, The Way of Tea and Justice, Rescuing the World's Favorite Beverage from Its Violent History, and her latest book is Letters from the Farm, A Simple Path for a Deeper Spiritual Life. Becca, welcome to Day One.
I'm so happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
Your ministry is a remarkable example of what happens when someone decides to do something about social justice concerns. How did it begin for you?
It began just as like an outreach. I mean, it was really simple. One house, invite women who had, you know, known so much injustice and been abandoned by so many communities. Just invite them to come and find sanctuary, live 2 years free with no authority in the house. It was an old and simple model, and in my mind, what I really wanted for my life and for my ministry was just to be a witness to the truth, that in the end, love was the most powerful force for change that any of us have.
So give us a sense of the breadth of the Thistle Farms ministry today.
Sure. So we've been, you know, a full-fledged community of women with a holistic approach for about 15 years now. Mm-hmm. The first residential house opened in 1997, and the bath and body care company started in 2001. I think of it now as a movement about mm-hmm. women's freedom, where men and women are celebrating together this idea that we can come together and all of us can be better. We can be healed by being a whole community and not leaving people behind. That's really what it is. It's not just about helping, you know, a subculture of women who have criminal histories or mm-hmm. who were runaways at, you know, a young age. So because we're a movement, the breadth is pretty wide. So we have 6 residential homes in Nashville. Mm-hmm. We have sister communities all over the country. We have one right here in Atlanta, Beloved.
Mm-hmm.
And these are loose affiliations of Housing First models for women survivors. We have about 480 retail stores where our natural bath and body care products are carried. They're made all by women survivor leaders in a company. We have studios, we have a cafe, and we have partnerships called Shared Trade with 24 countries around the globe. So it's truly becoming a global movement. That's how wide and vast it's becoming. It is a miracle to watch it.
That has to be an incredible sense of accomplishment for you to see that prosper and thrive.
It's not a sense of accomplishment. I don't have it. I uh-huh. have a lot of grateful tears to shed. Mm. But I really, when I look around, I'm amazed by what it is. And it doesn't feel like mine at all. Mm-hmm. It really feels like a communal vision of the first 5 women that came in and formed it. And they had such strong opinions and mm-hmm. leadership. And then the volunteers, the students, the staff, people who all came, and they put a lot of themselves into it. And something happened that I really think none of us could have done alone. Mm-hmm. So I don't feel I don't even think about it as, you know, anything I've done. I really recognize that I've gotten to be a part of something beautiful.
Hmm. And for more information, where can people go?
For more information, people just need to go to thistlefarms.org. They can order online. They can see ways to volunteer and learn more about the story and what they can do in their own communities. With 23 sister programs around the country, almost all the listeners can go, you know, somewhere mm-hmm. close by and find out how they can help women who are survivors.
It's an amazing ministry. And your new book is Letters from the Farm, A Simple Path for a Deeper Spiritual Life from Morehouse Publishing. It's a book of devotional letters that are full of compassion for humanity and a passion for justice. What was your hope in writing the book?
You know, it changed. At first, In my mind, I was writing it for like seminarians and people who were studying for ministry, that they needed some like real clear, easy letters, almost like letters to a young poet mm-hmm. kind of thing. And then it changed. I was doing a lot of prison visits, and I almost wanted, some of the letters felt like I was writing to women who were still locked up and needed just a, you know, beautiful hope shot.
mm-hmm.
And then sometimes I felt like I was writing to my kids.
Mm.
And women who I was working with, and then just strangers. And so what I realized was that I was writing my love letter to God, that I have a pretty deep longing in me. And these letters seemed like they were the best I could do at feeling some sense of love requited in connection and community.
Mm-hmm. Because of your unique ministry, you are a popular inspirational speaker, and you've been featured on many of the news channels. You were named a champion of change by the White House in 2011 and the 2014 Humanitarian of the Year by the Small Business Council of America. You've been inducted into the Tennessee Women's Hall of Fame. You were given an honorary doctorate by SWANE, the University of the South, and I could go on and on. But what lessons from all of this do you hope to communicate to people of faith, especially people who are in the margins?
I think one of the best lessons I've learned along this journey is truly people want to hope with you. You know, mm-hmm. at the beginning, it feels like, okay, think about human trafficking, that global issue, and how it feels so overwhelming. And like, what could we possibly do? And what I'm learning is we can do a lot. Mm-hmm. We can have an impact. We can have a voice. We can have an opinion. We can share our stories as good news stories that even places where we've been broken can be transformed into a compassionate advocacy. I mean, I used to think that there maybe sometimes was reason to be cynical.
Hmm.
And I still think every now and then I can slip into that. But really, in the core of my heart, it would be I'm hopeful.
Hmm.
And that's the biggest gift that you can have in the ministry and that people should hear, is people will hope with you if you've let that be your heart.
Mm. You also serve as chaplain of St. Augustine's Chapel, serving the Vanderbilt community. What are you seeing in students' lives that gives you hope for the future?
That's a really good question. You know, there's a lot more awareness on campus. I'll point two things out really quickly. One is the increased reporting of sexual violence on campus mm-hmm. I see as hopeful.
Mm-hmm.
That back in the day, you never reported, you never talked about it, it was never there. You know, on average, the women that I serve in the Magdalene community are first raped between the ages of 7 and 11 and hit the streets between 14 and 16 years old. Another statistic is 1 in 5 women will experience sexual violence in their life. And the idea to me that the whole community is concerned now, I mean, from administration and counseling and, you know, sororities and mm-hmm. everywhere. And so when there is sexual violence on campus, people report it and they start having that conversation. I think that's very helpful.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I think is that the global community is much easier to access because of our social media.
Mm-hmm.
And when I'm around the college campus and word goes out and hundreds of people show up, where before I was used to 10 or 20 people showing up, there's energy around it. There's a place of compassion people enter now around the world of human trafficking. And the social media access has enabled us to share that story more quickly and to a broader audience. And it feels very hopeful.
Mm. Tell us about your family.
So we have 3 sons. My husband is a country music writer, And our oldest son just signed a deal in Nashville. Mm-hmm. Our middle son, Caney, he is a sophomore at the University of the South in Suwannee. And our youngest is in his 10th grade year at USN in Nashville. They're all three boys, so it's like Comedy Central at our house. And it's a really good balance when you think about the large number of women I serve in the communities of Magdalen and Thistle Farms. I come home, you know, and it's a different story. But my family is my joy. You know, they are they're talented, good, loving boys. It's a gift.
So as we'll hear in your sermon, you are the daughter of an Episcopal priest, but he died when you were very young. Mm-hmm. How did you sense your own calling to the ministry?
Well, when I was growing up, women weren't ordained mm-hmm. in the Episcopal Church, and I was a math major, which I think ended up serving me well as, you know, the founder of a social enterprise, that some of those skills were good. But growing up, I just knew stories of my dad. I mean, they moved from New York in 1968, and that was the year he was killed by a drunk driver. Mm. And so my mom, who was 35 at the time with five kids, just stayed in the South because she didn't have very many options. Mm-hmm. But she told great stories. Mm. I mean, she was a great storyteller and painted a wonderful picture of my dad. And I think I am my parents' child. I mean, my mom was a nurse that ended up running a community center for kids who were underserved in Nashville, and my dad was a priest, and somehow in the community of Thistle Farms, I've combined those mm-hmm. into one journey. So I feel like the apple fell very close to the tree.
Well, as we continue in Epiphany, your sermon this week focuses on the gospel lesson from John chapter 2. Would you read it for us?
I would love to. On the third day, there was a wedding in Cana of Galilee, and the mother of Jesus was there. Jesus and his disciples had also been invited to the wedding. When the wine gave out, the mother of Jesus said to him, "They have no wine." And Jesus said to her, "Woman, what concern is that to you and me? My hour has not yet come." His mother said to the servants, "Do whatever he tells you." Now standing there were six stone water jars for the Jewish rites of purification, each holding 20 or 30 gallons. Jesus said to them, "Fill the jars with water." And they filled them up to the brim. He said to them, "Now draw some out and take it to the chief steward." So they took it. When the steward tasted the water that had become wine, he did not know where it came from, though the servants who had drawn the water knew. And the steward called the bridegroom and said to him, "Everyone serves the good wine first and then the inferior wine after the guests have become drunk. But you have kept the good wine until now." Jesus did this, the first of his signs, in Cana of Galilee, and revealed his glory, and his disciples believed in him.
This is the first of Jesus' signs and one of my favorite stories in the Gospels. What strikes you about this text?
What strikes me about the text is the idea that he wasn't prepared or ready.
Yeah.
But yet the people that were closest to him still, you know, called him out. And I think that is such a great lesson for me sometimes, is like to be willing to listen to the calling, not just in prayer or just in a voice within, but literally voices around me saying, "It's time, let's go." And the other thing I love is the abundance. I mean, 60 gallons of really good wine, that's abundant. And I think about that, like how I spend my whole life at the Eucharist taking one sip at a time. And how I long for that sometime, just to see that abundance before me. And it makes sense to me that it would have to be such a beautifully abundant sign to be the first one.
Becca, we look forward to hearing your sermon, Seeing Signs and Feeling Wonder. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
And if you'd like to listen again to today's program or read or share a transcript of Becca Stevens' sermon, visit our website at dayone.org. Or for a free printed sermon transcript, call us toll-free at 1-888-411-DAY1. Thank you.
Epiphany is the season we celebrate signs. We mark four epiphanies in this season of light, including the story of the Magi, Jesus' baptism at the River Jordan, changing water to wine, and the Transfiguration. These epiphanies are selected from the events in Jesus' life when people saw signs and were able to glimpse into the fullness of faith. In today's epiphany, we celebrate the wonder and miracle of Jesus' first public sign, the changing of water to wine in the second chapter of John at a reception in Cana of Galilee. Now, just a quick side note, this is one of only two arguments Jesus loses in the whole gospel. The second is to the Canaanite woman who begged for healing for her daughter. In this argument, Jesus loses to his mother who doesn't listen when he said his time has not yet come to demonstrate this dramatic sign of God's abundance and richness. Instead, she instructs the stewards to bring him what he needs, and new and good wine is created as a testimony. So we can see that Jesus is the Christ and the author of a new creation in which love is made manifest among us. Signs are like the Alpha and the Omega of God's unfolding revelation. We can see them from the very beginning, with the sign of a tree of life in a garden in Eden, to the very end, when the sign was offered as a vision of a city of God with a river running through it. Signs remind us that God has not abandoned us. God is dwelling with us. Signs are a gift to keep us looking towards the heavens and walking close to the earth. Signs are available to us all. They are not reserved for some, and we don't need clear vision or still waters. They shine forth in the midst of cloudy skies, where fear or terror want to impede our ability to see new life and hope. They break through rocky ground where we remember our vulnerability. Signs are woven into the fabric of creation to say that whatever is before your eyes, love gets the final word. One of the most important, profound signs in my life came from a tiny slip of paper that fell from my father's prayer book. He was an Episcopal priest who was killed by a drunk driver when I was 5 years old. I never saw a sermon he wrote and didn't know much about his work. But after I was ordained, my mom gave me his old 1928 prayer book. For several years, I prayed the daily offices, holding his book carefully and marveling at the warm pages where his fingers turned the same pages I was holding. Then one day, a thin square scrap of paper fell from the book, and I read the only sentence I have ever seen written in my father's hand. "In the shadow of his cross, may your soul find rest." A slip of paper with a single sentence became a powerful sign for me, reminding me that in the midst of this world, we don't have to wait until everything is settled to see a sign. We are to see them while we're still in the midst of the shadow of the cross. We don't have to wait for resurrection to feel the hope of new life and love, even though death and trauma can feel like a haze over a holy vision that God brings to our senses. Our calling is to look deeper, seeing the truth present in suffering. Seeing signs isn't like putting on rose-colored glasses. It's not a magic trick, like looking into a 3D image where if we squint our eyes, something beautiful will come out. Signs are more like wearing beatific lenses. Signs ask us to be willing to recognize the blessedness in the brokenness. And signs come at a cost that requires the discipline to look and look and pray and then surrender, and to be willing to add our sweat and tears to whatever it is we're seeing. On a cold and snowy Friday night this winter, a group from the community of Thistle Farms were in the Diocese of Chicago. Thistle Farms is a movement that celebrates women's freedom and includes residential communities for survivors of trafficking, prostitution, addiction, and violence, as well as a company that manufactures and sells all natural products. We travel around the country selling the products and sharing the story of hope that women recover and communities can heal. After our presentation on this Friday night, it started snowing like crazy. Three of the survivor leaders of Thistle Farms and I decided to take a late-night walk by the conference center and play in the snow. The women felt a bit more scared when we walked down by the lake as the snow was thick and the path became slippery. So they did what anyone would do. They grabbed hands. Following from behind, I saw the three shadowed figures on the snowy night by a lake holding hands. And unexpectedly and gracefully, I could see the sign before me. It was plain and simple. It was more than 15 years in the making, and it brought me to tears. Alone, many of the women walked the streets and fell down plenty. Alone, they knew the inside of prison walls, the backside of anger, the short side of justice, and the underside of bridges. But together, they were strong, and I knew without a shadow of doubt that no one was going to fall. The sign inspired and humbled me to keep going and to remember that to heal, we have to hold on to each other. Epiphany is the season to see three women walking by a lake in the late night snow as a sign of love incarnate. To see women holding on to one another as a sign of how we should walk and live together. To see that this world is imbued with God's beauty and grace. The signs are in starry patterns in the night sky. They are given to us in the scattered leaves offered like breadcrumbs on a road of hope. You can see them in rich wine, on slips of paper, and in the wonder of a snowy walk. You can experience signs and dreams where fears are laid aside and hearts are wide open. You can find them. We just need to keep praying for eyes to see, ears to hear, and hearts to feel them. Then we take those signs and use them to help us love the world over and over again until we get it right. May these signs and more resounds so greatly in your senses that all you are left with is the impulse to kneel and weep with joy, with hope, with forgiveness, with the promise that God's kingdom is always closer than we might think.
The Reverend Becca Stevens was our preacher today. Becca is an Episcopal priest, author, and the founder of Thistle Farms in Nashville, Tennessee. Her message is entitled, Seeing Signs and Feeling Wonder. For a free transcript, call us toll-free at 1-888-411-DAY1. That's 888-411-3291. Or write to us at Day 1, 2715 Peachtree Road, Atlanta, Georgia 30305. Day One depends on the financial contributions of our faithful listeners. If you appreciate our ministry, please consider sending a donation. We're grateful for your much-needed support. Again, our address is Day One, 2715 Peachtree Road, Atlanta, Georgia 30305. And remember, to listen again to today's program, share a sermon transcript, or watch inspiring videos, visit us online at dayone.org. I'm Sherry Miller. Next week on Day One, we're delighted to have with us the acclaimed author, speaker, and scholar, Diana Butler Bass, whose latest book is entitled Grounded, Finding God in the World, a Spiritual Revolution. Diana's message is entitled, The Power of Today. Be sure to tune in. Stevens offers some final reflections on today's sermon with our host, Peter Wallace.
Becca, Epiphany is the season we celebrate signs, you said, and the Epiphany we heard about today in John chapter 2 celebrates the wonder and miracle of Jesus' first sign, changing water to wine. Signs remind us that God has not abandoned us, that God is dwelling with us, you said. Some of us aren't naturally attuned to looking for signs in our everyday lives. How can we change that?
Well, I think sometimes it's not that you are looking for signs, but you're just looking. And the gift is to see what's before you. And then that becomes a sign. Mm-hmm. So it's not like I have to have, you know, a double rainbow for it to be a sign. It can just be a rainbow. Or it doesn't have to be a diamond. It can be a pebble. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be a rose. It can be a dandelion. And then there's signs all around you. But you have to be open to seeing it as, wow, you know, this is a blessing. This is a wonder that I get to be in this world and love in this world. Mm-hmm.
I love the story of the slip of paper falling from your father's prayer book on which he'd written, "In the shadow of his cross, may your soul find rest." That became a powerful sign for you that we don't have to wait for resurrection to sense the hope of new life and love. We can see the sign of God's love in the midst of shadows. That's an encouraging reminder for all of us. What would you say to someone listening right now who finds him or herself in the shadows of pain or fear?
I would remind people that even though they're lonely, it doesn't mean we're alone, that we can cry with our Creator, and that we can, in faith, transform loneliness into solitude, and it becomes holy. Mm. You know, and it's really a matter of perspective, and it's a matter of saying, I want to be faithful even through this. You know, I mean, how many of us haven't felt in the dark of night both the terror but also the blessing?
Mm-hmm.
You know, where you have time to think and space to think, or you have time to wonder and space to wonder, even though that's when, you know, our fears come out and our anxieties come out and all of that comes out too. But I try not to be afraid of it anymore. I try not to be afraid of those parts of the wonder. And so if people are in the shadow of the cross, that's a very holy place to be.
You encouraged us to keep praying for eyes to see, ears to hear, and hearts to feel God's signs, but then to take them and use them to help us love the world over and over again until we get it right. So what should these signs encourage us to be about?
I really do think that's what they're supposed to be about, is about loving the world. I think a lot of us, including myself, get confused sometimes, and we think we want the world to love us, or we want to feel loved, and that's not the calling. The calling is to use what we have to love the world. You know, and sometimes we think it's, how do we change the world? That's not the calling.
Hmm.
We're not called to change it. We're called to love it. And so sometimes we have to change in order to love it better. And so many, many times in my mind, the signs around us point to how we might need to change some so that we can love the world better.
Becca, what's one thing from your sermon today that you hope our listeners will keep in mind this week?
I think the one thing, if you take something away from the sermon, is just to look around again. And even in the bleak midwinter, and even on these long nights, there's holiness and light that we don't expect to see. And to give yourself the gift in this brand new year to see it with new eyes.
Becca Stevens, thank you for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you for welcoming Thistle Farms to day one, and I look forward to a long friendship with you.
Amen.
Day One is the voice of America's mainline Protestant churches. Visit us online at dayone.org. Our program is recorded and edited by Donald Jones and produced by Peter Wallace. Thank you for joining us. I'm Sherry Miller, wishing you all God's blessings on day one and forever.